Looking for a new sports show?
So my wife and I go to the movies because you have to go opening weekend.
Yeah, I was with my boys, so he got us right up to the front of the line of this new club.
So I'm stuck watching my sister's dog again. He's throwing up all night.
2.5 games back in the standings, I feel like the Mets are one big bat away from competing. Imagine that. A sports show that's about sports. The Joe Fan Show. Are you fan enough?
Welcome to the Joe Fan Show with your host, Clayton Hamilton.
Greetings, sports fans. My name is Clayton Hamilton, and you're listening to the Joe Fan Show, coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, the greatest city in the world, right here on the home of Vegas sports, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Let's check the headlines. Former New York Jets wide receiver Brandon Marshall has signed a two-year, $12 million contract to remain in New York, but this time with the Giants. Marshall caught just 59 passes for 788 yards and only 3 touchdowns last season. Kansas freshman Josh Jackson will miss the Jayhawks' opening game in the Big 12 tournament against the winner of either Oklahoma or TCU, while he serves a suspension for a February 2nd traffic incident, which resulted in citations for, among other things, striking an unattended vehicle while failing to leave contact information. He is averaging 16.4 points per game and 7.2 rebounds. And the Kingdom of the Netherlands has defeated Chinese Taipei 6-5 in the World Baseball Classic. They will join Israel as the first two nations to advance to the second round of the tournament. Today we have Matt Reed and Stefan Phil, y'all. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Are you fan enough?
So let's get loud and let's get proud. We got a game.
Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Patrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward a feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, always feeling fine out in Oakland, California. My good buddy, Matt Reed. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, Clayton. Good to be here.
How you been, friend?
Feeling good, enjoying all this basketball. Can't wait for next week.
Yeah, it should be pretty good. I'm running on fumes again, staying up late, watching World Baseball Classic games coming in from Asia. How about Israel, Matt? Israel, on their way to the second round, we have finally gotten the answer that we have always asked, and that is, what would happen if Sam Fold and Ike Davis were in the same lineup? And now we know.
Boom, there we go, right?
Yeah.
And Jason Marquis trying to make a comeback.
Yeah.
I saw he threw a few strong innings.
Yeah, Jason Marquis.
He tried to work his way back into the bigs.
Well, you remember Jason Marquis there went on a little stretch where all he did was make the playoffs. If you signed Jason Marquis, you made it to the playoffs.
Automatic, right?
Yeah. So Israel.
Did you win, though? That was the real question. You
no.
got to win, though.
No, not at all. But South Korea going home, Chinese Taipei going home. And not only is South Korea going home, South Korea is going to have to qualify for next time around, very much like what happened to Australia and Mexico in last World Baseball Classic. South Korea, they're on the hook, and they're going to have to re-qualify for the next installment. But Kingdom of the Netherlands, also known as Curaçao, because I think just about everybody from the Netherlands is from the Caribbean nation of Curaçao. But they and Israel off to the Tokyo Dome to join Japan. Japan, a winner last night as well. They have advanced to the second round. So just one more spot open in the Asia pool.
Do you think a lot of people are really into the WBC right now?
Not over here, I think, in the States. It's on really late at night and only available on ESPN Deportes and the Major League Baseball Network. But they had huge crowds at the Tokyo Dome. Over 30-something thousand, 40,000 when Japan played, and they had 15, 16,000 in a game in Korea when Korea played. Very much smaller crowd when it was Israel versus the Netherlands.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, here in the States, obviously, you know, there's going to be a lot of professional players playing in this, and And, you know, it's obviously good for baseball, I guess, to get a worldwide presence going on. But I just don't people I've talked to and people I know, just no one's really into it and you know, really cares about the outcome.
Yeah, and to be fair, at least, though, the teams in the Americas have yet to start. So we won't see Team USA, Canada, Mexico. I would expect Mexico's going to be hosting some games. There'll be quite a crowd down there in a pretty good atmosphere when Mexico opens play. But we'll see when it gets to that second round in the semifinals, when everybody gets over here and the tournament sort of joins and is all in an easier time zone for us, how it plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. You're probably right there. But, I mean, at least it's early in the season or before the MLB season where, you know, if guys are going to go play, it's not going to really – it shouldn't really affect their major league clubs. But – you know, with the Olympics and the World Baseball Classic, you know, for me, I'm more of a your team here in the States kind of guy, mm-hmm. unfortunately, than I am about playing for your country. But no, I understand it. I hope it you know, starts to garnish a little excitement with baseball season right around the corner.
Yeah, I know what always seems to happen, at least when they talk to the Team USA guys, and I wouldn't really say that we have the absolute best team that we could put forward, but guys that come away and play in it, once they leave, I think that really helps to bring in sort of the next generation of stars. There always seems like a group full of guys that decline it, and they sort of see what the atmosphere is and see what's going on and kind of wish that they had decided to play. But you are able to change some players out between each round, so there has been some talk, should the Team USA make it to the semifinals, that Clayton Kershaw said that he may make himself available for a semifinal or a final.
Yeah, well, that would get the blood flowing a little bit when you see guys like that decide to step in.
Mm-hmm. So there's a little talk about him, maybe Madison Bumgarner as well. If you could throw one of them in the semifinal and one in the final, that certainly helps our chances. But there are some far-reaching effects, Matt, of the World Baseball Classic, and that is a lot of guys are out of camp because they're going to join their national team. We see this with the Mets. They lost 14 guys to the World Baseball Classic, so for their spring training games, it gives them an opportunity to look at some other folks. Your guy, Mr. Tim Tebow himself, he was in big league camp today. He found himself in a game, and anybody that doesn't like Tim Tebow will get great satisfaction in his performance today. First at bat against Rick Porcello, strikes out looking, comes up with a bases loaded, Matt, grounds into a double play. Third at bat, got hit by a pitch, standing on first base, line drive to second base, gets doubled off of first, comes up the fourth time, three pitches from Brandon Workman, fastball strike, gave him the hook, didn't get the bat off the shoulder, 0-for-3 with two Ks and a double play for your Tim Tebow.
Yeah, and then not the most auspicious beginning for what could be a long baseball career, right, for Tim Tebow?
Yeah.
But, you know, I know a few people have been making a big deal about, you know, he's probably taking a spot away from another guy that probably deserves it. And, yes, you know, because of his name, he's gonna get an opportunity that most people wouldn't get. But I'll give him credit. I think the first strikeout from Porcello, the ball looked a little low and away, but – other than that, yeah, I mean, we know he's not a major league player, mm-hmm. especially against, you know, the, you know, top level talent. You know, a guy like Porcello who won Cy Young last year. You know, I don't expect much from Tebow, but you know, he's out there giving it a try. You know, eventually this will be done and over with, and we'll just look back on these days when Tim Tebow is out there playing for the Mets. And that's the best part of all team, it's the Mets, right?
Right. And the best part for me is that Billy Crystal, when he played and he got his one at bat, he grounded second.
Yeah, even Garth Brooks was able to get a few hits, wasn't he?
Yeah. So, yeah, remember, how did Will Ferrell do last year?
He played every position, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember he got a ground ball in the hole when he was out in left field, held a guy to a double instead of a triple. So,
yeah.
So we shall see. But, you know, for anybody that says that he's taken up a spot, and for those people that do get upset, you really do need to realize how minor league baseball works, and that each one of these organizations, they have five teams worth of 23 to 27 guys.
but they do not have hopes for 150, 170 players. There's about 20 guys, 25 realistically within the organization that they have any hope for that are going to make a big league roster. Everyone else is just there so that those 25 guys can play games. And to think think if it's another way, honestly, you don't know minor league baseball, because it's not that those guys are throwaways. And I feel bad for a lot of those guys making $800 a month that in their own head have a dream. But the organization's looking at you as you're a decent enough person to play third base so that we can develop our third base, our second baseman or our shortstop or our starting pitcher. You're just a placeholder until there's somebody else with your skill set that's younger and cheaper. And so he's really not taking the place of a prospect. He's taking away the place of another guy that would just make $800 a month.
But might need that $800 a month.
Yeah, not really.
I guess $800 a month isn't going to take you very far.
No.
But Tebow's, I would assume a guy like Tebow is taking care of some of those guys that he's playing with.
Yeah.
So I guess it makes up for it in the end. But, yeah, it's an experiment, and it's a ploy, and it probably put, butts in the seats down there for spring training, maybe more so than they would normally get. So, the Mets really just care about selling tickets, really, right?
Yeah, I think that's a part of the thing. They want to sell some tickets. They want to sell some jerseys. His number 15 jersey, which he did not wear today. He wore number 97, I believe. So, good on you, Tim Tebow. Hey, Matt, big week here in Las Vegas, not just the NASCAR race in town, but conference tournaments as well. Pac-12 getting underway at the T-Mobile Arena. Arizona State up 95-84 over Stanford. That game is in overtime. A little under a minute left, but the big boys of the Pac-12 getting ready to go tomorrow. That includes UCLA, Arizona, Utah, all of the big guns. Oregon coming out to play tomorrow.
Yep. Yeah, really the Pac-12. For all the hype that they've gotten with Oregon and Arizona and UCLA, the rest of the conference has really struggled. And there's a couple teams right now, really USC and Cal, that are kind of on the bubble. And really, I only see one of them being SC, as long as they can go out and get at least the win tonight against Washington, which they should, and then at least have a good showing, or maybe even pick up a win in the second round against Utah. I see USC getting in, but we're gonna look at a Pac-12 that's probably going to get four teams in the tournament, but three of those teams have a legit shot to win the whole thing.
Yeah, it is amazing how good Oregon turned out to be. Let's not forget that they had two pretty big clunkers at the beginning of the year. They lost at Baylor, and then they lost on the neutral court to Georgetown. And we said to ourselves, what's wrong with Oregon? Everyone had said that they were a contender for the national title. They were a preseason top-ranked team, and they just looked like crap. But they have shown that they are a contender, and Dylan Brooks may be one of the best players in America.
Oh, you hit it on the head right there. I mean, that was going on without Dylan Brooks, and what we've seen with a healthy Dylan Brooks and this team kind of finding their stride is that they are legit. We knew coming into the year they'd be legit. They made a run in the tournament last year, which kind of opened people's eyes. So, yeah, Dylan Brooks is going to get a lot of pub throughout this, not only the Pac-12 tournament here, but throughout the whole NCAA tournament. You're going to hear a lot about Dylan Brooks, and I think we've seen him hit big shots. And he had a game winner against UCLA. I think he had another game winner this year. He's a guy that is going to open us some eyes in the tournament. All kind of Buddy Hield, maybe not as exciting as Buddy Hield was last year, but Dylan Brooks is going to open some eyes, and I look forward to watching him in the tournament.
The big matchup, Lonzo Ball versus Dylan Brooks, UCLA versus Oregon. You always talk about senior leadership. That's something that Oregon has that maybe UCLA is a little light on. Lonzo Ball, a freshman. TJ Leaf, a freshman. They do have Bryce Alford, who's been there for 4 years, plays significant minutes, is a leader on that team. Do you think that youth catches up to UCLA?
I would say no, just because Bryce Alford is a guy that's been through the wars and kind of knows the whole deal, and we'll be able to lead these guys. But Lonzo Ball is just one of those special talents where I don't think the bright lights are going to get to him. I think he's played enough big games in his career, and you know, he is that good where I don't think the bright lights really affect him much. Like you said, with UCLA, it's all about if their shots are falling, because we know they get up and down the floor pretty quick. It's a matter of, you know, are they going to make shots? Because they don't get a lot of stops. Their defense has improved the last half of the season here, but it's run and gun, and you know, in the tournament, if you get cold, you're in trouble. So I think that's the only thing that slows them down would be, you know, shots not falling. But, yeah, Lonzo Ball. His dad talks a great game. That's the other guy. They'll probably end up being the star of the NCAA tournament. It'll be Lonzo Ball's dad.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think the lights are going to get any brighter than they'd be at Oracle Arena if he were leading the Warriors, or at Staples Center when he's running the Lakers, the only team that he will play for. I mean, he's already penciled in Rookie of the Year for the Lakers next year. So that NCAA tournament, that's nothing.
Steph Curry, who, right?
Exactly. Speaking of the Los Angeles Lakers, we've got Stefan Filial in the house, going to join us right after the break. Talk a little NBA basketball. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. The Joe Fan Scoreboard is brought to you by Kazum Adventures. For outdoor hikes that can win you money, visit radio.dokazum.com for exclusive picture and video clues. Get outdoors, find flags, play Kazum, the hottest new game in Vegas. radio.gokazum.com. Second round of the ACC tournament, Miami defeats Syracuse 62-57. Kamari Murphy had 16 points and 10 boards to lead the Canes. They will next face a top-seeded North Carolina. Duke beats Clemson 79-72. Jason Tatum and Frank Jackson each with 20. First round of the Mountain West, Utah State defeats San Jose State 90-64. Colby McEwen with 27 points. This one just final. Arizona State beats Stanford 98-88. That one went to overtime. Conference USA first round, Rice beats Southern Miss 86-75. And in the Big Ten tournament at halftime, Penn State leads Nebraska 38-33. Things get underway tonight in the Association at 4 as Jimmy Butler and the Bulls head to the Amway Center in Orlando to take on Terrence Ross and the Magic. Two games up at 4:30 as Brooklyn is at Atlanta and Charlotte is in Miami. Five games tipping off at 5 with the Knicks at the Bucks, Raptors at Pelicans, Jazz at the Rockets, Clippers at Timberwolves, and Pistons at Pacers. At 5:30, the Kings are in San Antonio to face the Spurs, and at 6, the Wizards are at the Nuggets. And in the late game, Isaiah Thomas and the Celtics are at Oracle Arena in Oakland to face Steph Curry and the Warriors. And just three games in the NHL this evening, all of them starting at 5. Red Wings are at the Bruins, Senators are at the Stars, and the Penguins are at the Jets. And that is a look at your Joe Fan Scoreboard. So, Matt, we talked a little bit about college basketball, and some teams might be a bit on the bubble. Some of them, their dream might have died today, that being Syracuse as one of them. Any chance the Q's going to make an appearance after dropping one to Miami?
Yeah, there's still a chance. I mean, their resume is pretty decent, but it's always tough when you lose in the first round of your conference tournament. And I think even though that shouldn't hold a ton of weight, it always does, just based off perception. But you know, I think a lot of it's going to depend on how these other tournaments go. You know, if we see some teams end up winning conference tournaments that shouldn't have won them, I mean, that's just a spot taken away from Syracuse. So they're definitely like about as on the bubble as you can be. So I still think they worked their way in, but that loss hurt today.
Yeah, that's good news for Vanderbilt, who looks like they just need to secure one win to be clearly into the field. And Illinois and Iowa, two teams out of the Big Ten, if they can make a bit of a run and get 2 days or three deep into this tournament, going to be hard to keep a team like Iowa out with a really exciting player like Peter Jok. I think if Iowa wins two games, just might see them get in, especially if we can get some stumbles from somebody like Wake Forest.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why these conference tournaments end up, you know, as much as they shouldn't carry a lot of weight, they do, because like you said, a deep run for some teams looks good, and early exits end up hurting more than they probably should. But, yeah, there's a few, you know, non-Power 5 teams like, you know, Middle Tennessee, Vermont, mm-hmm. even Rhode Island, teams like that that I think are in the mix, and that, you know, man, it's going to be so hard. I don't know what – yeah, we got to figure out a way. We have 68 teams. Wouldn't you bump it to 72 or 84? There's so many good college teams out there right now.
Yeah, Stefan Filial just walked into the studio, and he is shaking his head at you, Matt, that there is enough college basketball as it is, and he likes to focus on the NBA. Welcome, Stefan.
I do. What's up? What's happening? Too many games. You don't want to flood it.
There's never too many games.
You don't want to flood it, though.
Yeah, no such thing.
I do like this conference tournament week, though, because it does give teams an extra chance. It's like one last shot that everybody is still alive, which is what college football is missing, that you could be dead for winning a national championship in week two. College basketball goes all the way to the end. Everybody gets a shot. But I do feel bad for those teams that have won their conference that are not in a Power Five, that lose their conference tournament and see themselves on the outside looking in. And we just talked about Illinois State. Illinois State's in a tough spot, Matt, because they didn't win their conference tournament. They have a decent record, but they're probably going to be on the outside looking in. And you think about, well, what if they had won that game? Would Wichita State be in the same boat?
Yeah, that's tough, because I really think both teams deserve to be in it. And it is going to be tough, because when you're talking about small, like you said, non-Power 5 conferences. When you have two really good teams, whoever wins that tournament championship, obviously the team that's in, the other team is really kind of hung out to dry, which is a shame, because Illinois State is a great team this year. I mean, they put together a heck of a season, and they go into it against a Wichita State team that I think is a team to watch out for in the tournament. You know, you don't have 30 wins for no reason, and obviously they end up winning that game, to win the Missouri Valley, but I still think Illinois State deserves in, and maybe they're one of those, 68 that have to play to get in.
Yeah, they could be one of the first four that have to play that Tuesday there in Dayton. My question would be to Stefan Filial: how deep of a run would the Los Angeles Lakers make in the NCAA tournament? There's a little bit of question about their heart. Luke Walton called him soft.
Yeah, he's not the only one that's called him soft. I mean, I feel like we've heard that over the last three or four coaches that we've had. I don't know. I'm not really high on my guys right now.
Did you know, Matt, that the Los Angeles Lakers gave up the 20,000th point in Dirk Nowitzki's career and then turned around and gave him up the 30,000th as well?
With Dirk being my favorite player, of course I knew that. And it was over a number 7, Lamar Odom, where he got 20,000, and now it was over number 7, Larry Nance Jr., that he gets 30,000, and what a performance he put on last night, huh? How about that first quarter, dropping 18 out of nowhere, and then getting 30,000? How awesome was that?
Well, the Lakers gave up 38 points in the first quarter, so I mean it wasn't all Dirk. They Lakers just don't know defense. They don't know focus. They're too comfortable. I mean, they're just too comfortable with quote unquote the process.
Right.
And, you know, the only way to get out of the process is to actually not be comfortable with it, because you're fighting through it.
You know who was super comfortable? Jim Buss. And then he got fired. No. Now he's not comfortable at all.
Oh, no. He doesn't want anybody to be comfortable. I mean, he and his brother talking about trying to sell their stakes and eventually making the Buss family the minority. Mm hmm. Of the Lakers.
Yeah, it's what a train wreck that is the Los Angeles Lakers. And on the other on the flip side, let's look at this Dallas Mavericks team a little bit, because they do have stability at the ownership position. They have a very strong personality in Mark Cuban. He's leading this team. He's trying to figure out ways to always make them competitive. And if you're the Mavericks and you're sort of on the outside looking in, they're two games back of Denver right now for that eighth spot. I feel like there's teams that are better off for tanking and teams that are better off not to. And I think that the Mavericks are a team that's better off, Stefan, making the eighth seed and losing in the first round of the playoffs than missing it.
Well, I mean, with this being Dirk Nowitzki's last couple years. I mean, it's always good to send them home after playing in the playoffs. I mean, they still have a chance to get inside, to get into the playoffs. I mean, Portland's right there. They're pretty much tied in the standings, and they have a schedule that's kind of that's favorable. They'll get tested within the next week or so. But I mean, the trades that he's made, Justin Anderson, that was a big move because he was supposed to come in and kind of hold down that small forward spot. But when they brought in Harrison Barnes, that kind of changed some things as far as Justin Anderson's growth. Mm-hmm. And bringing in Nerlens Noel, that was big for them, especially since Dirt and Whiskey's in his last couple years.
Yeah, it will be fun to see, Matt, what sort of player Nerlens Noel is, because I feel like Nerlens Noel is like one of these guys that he should be from Europe that you hear all the stuff about but you never see play, and that's like Nerlens Noel. It's like he hasn't played in so long that he's just sort of a practice myth, and you really want to see what's going to happen when he gets into the court. But when I look at this Mavs team, Matt, I see guys that probably have to do a little bit too much, and I look at somebody like Yogi Ferrell and Seth Curry who are really bench guys getting starter minutes.
They are, but they're proving themselves. And if you watch over the last month, especially Seth Curry, I mean, mm-hmm. he's playing great basketball. He's averaging almost 17 points a game right now. And Yogi Ferrell has come in and given them some energy. You know, he's averaging 12 points a game. Stuff they weren't going to get from a guy like Deron Williams anymore, who's at the tail end of his career. So you bring in some fresh legs, some guys that really want it. Harrison Barnes having a nice year. And yeah, this is a team, Noel coming in and kind of gives them that. You know, that they haven't really had a big guy that's had a lot of energy and hops and all that kind of stuff. So you add him to the mix. You know, this is obviously it's a team that's, you know, can make the playoffs. Are they going to make a run in the playoffs? No, but at least they're playing good basketball right now. And like Stefan said, the schedule is favorable these next couple weeks here. You know, they get Brooklyn twice. They do get the Sixers. But, you know, they'll be tested down the stretch, and we'll see. I mean, I like this team. I like the moves they made. You know, they gave up the veterans that they didn't really need anymore and maybe put themselves in position looking at a guy like Yogi Ferrell who maybe, you know, can give them something the next couple of years.
When you look back, I know that Dirk is your favorite player, Matt, and you sort of think about what his legacy is going to be in the NBA and what his final couple of years are going to be, what are your thoughts on him? In do you want to see him play a couple of two more, three more years on a bad team, or would you rather see him sort of walk away head held high, still at the top of his game?
Yeah, I think all the stars eventually, you know, they stick around as long as they can, and there are going to be times, like look at Kobe the last couple of years. The Lakers haven't been any good, and, you know, Kobe kind of struggled a little bit, but he still had those moments of magic where it really made it worth watching him play a little more. And watching what Dirk did last night, you know, an 18-point quarter he hadn't done since, like, 2007. So the fact that he, you know, just started feeling it, got it going, I mean, these are things. He's got 1 year left on his contract. I think he'll definitely play that out. As long as it doesn't hamper the team, and I think the Kobe's contract really hampered the Lakers and kind of put them behind the eight ball for a while now. I don't think Dirk's contract's really going to do that, especially the way the cap has moved up. So as long as he's not, you know, holding them down, but he still has a little bit left in him. I mean, he's played, 77 games, like 75, 77, 80 games the last 3 years. So it's not like he's not out there, you know, giving it something. So. One of the best ever. Yeah, he pads his stats a little bit down the stretch here. But, you know, when people are saying he's not a top 10 all-time player, we're talking about six guys that have reached 30,000 points. And I know there's going to be a few guys coming in after him, but I mean, this guy's been just an absolute stud and kind of revolutionized the game, not only with a big guy making, you know, coming in shooting the three ball right away, but, you know, that fadeaway, that one-foot fadeaway, it's going to go down in history.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's averaging 19-9, and he's the first to ever do it, like, past the age of 38. And so excuse me, his production is going to be there as long as he can stay healthy. That's really the only concern. And don't get it twisted. I mean, he's still getting about $20 million a year. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, 25 next year, yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
That's a chunk of change.
Everybody alludes to Kobe's contract, but I don't think that really hurt as much.
But $25 million and under this salary cap is not the same as $25 million three or 4 years ago.
His was also in the middle of a change, a CBA change as well. So I think a lot of people forget about that. But Dirk's presence in the NBA, he definitely revolutionized the game for the big man. And Kobe alluded to this. You know, I mean, he's my favorite player. And his development in the post for Dirk, even being that big man, I think he'll be great for guys like Porzingis. And Porzingis needing to learn to develop in the post, because we all know he's got the outside shot. He's got a crossover that Dirk never had.
Right.
And so Dirk has been very important, and he's already said that he's going to play his last year. And, I mean, that surprised me a little bit, because I want to see him go out on top, at least out of the playoffs, because next year there's no telling what's going
to
happen.
Right. I just want to know, Matt, real quick before we run to break, how bad do you feel if you're a Milwaukee Buck fan that you you drafted Dirk Nowitzki and traded him away, and you also had Kareem and you got rid of him?
And two guys that have scored 30,000 points in their career.
Right.
Well, they did get a tractor trailer out of it, didn't they?
That's right. They did get Robert tractor trailer.
Not running anymore, though.
I tell you what, for anybody who wants to poo-poo a little on Robert tractor trailer, he was the 1997 NIT tournament MVP, Matt. So,
hey, you know, coming out of college, he was legit. And I mean, everyone thought, you know, he was going to be a big-time player down low, but
that's college for you.
Didn't pan out. Not as well as Dirk did.
Let's not forget that Michael Olowokandi was the number one draft pick that year. And you know who went number three, Matt?
In that draft?
In that draft? Rafe LaFrance.
Rafe LaFrance
cool. Went to Denver. But before you say too much bad about Rafe LaFrance, he did lead the Western Conference in blocks and blocks per game one season. So
Rafe LaFrance was not bad. Rafe LaFrance had some decent minutes.
Rafe LaFrance played on the 2002 Team USA that finished sixth at FIBA World Championships, along with Michael Findlay was on that team, Jermaine O'Neal.
Oh, man.
Sean Marion, Ben Wallace, yep. Elton Brand.
Oh, my goodness.
That was,
where's the guards?
Baker, yeah. Was Vince Baker on that team?
No, Baron Davis was, though. He was on that team. Reggie Miller was on that team as well. And Jay Williams. Not Jason White Chocolate Williams, Jay.
Jay
Williams was on that team. Yeah. Finished
sixth. And now we see why we finished sixth.
Yeah, exactly. That was what the sort of impetus was to that in the 2004 bronze medal that really changed the face of Team USA basketball. So we can blame Rafe LaFrance for part of that.
Fair enough.
And what would the world have been like if Dirk Nowitzki had been a Clipper? I don't even want to. He probably would have broken his ankle.
Anything.
Exactly. When we come back, going to look at some big games on the schedule tonight. The Celtics and Warriors in action. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, along with Stefan Afilial in studio, Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. And just to button up what we were talking about before with Dirk and his old draft status. You know, Matt, in that 1998, Stefan and I were talking, Mike Bibby drafted number two overall. Antoine Jameson, Vince Carter also went before Dirk. And then Jason White Chocolate Williams was drafted by Sacramento. And then Larry Hughes by Philly. And coming in number nine overall, Dirk Nowitzki, followed by number 10, Paul Pierce.
But to be fair, Vince Carter is going to play till he's 80.
That's true. Vince Carter's value, complete value. And he was drafted by Golden State, traded to Toronto.
Yeah. I mean, all those guys you mentioned were pretty good. I don't think there were any bums in that list of guys you just went down. I think those guys all had pretty solid careers.
Yeah, just Michael Candy. He was the...
The Candy Man, the number one pick, ended up being the worst of them all.
Well, Larry Hughes, I mean, I think he could have been better.
And there were two other guys in that first round of note, Stephon, and that was the number 23rd pick by Denver was Tyronn Lue.
Oh, Ty Lue.
And then the 16th pick overall was Bryce Drew, who is now the head coach at Valpo. He had that big shot in the NCAA tournament, Matt.
Well, who won that bet?
Yeah. That I think that kind of sprungboard him to that first round, which obviously didn't work out very well.
Did not. Although, I tell you, Bryce Drew's brother, Scott Drew, who's the head coach at Baylor, having himself quite a year. Another team having quite a year is somebody that I know that Matt is always excited to talk about. And that is a team that right now, if the playoffs started, would have home field advantage up at the old Salt Palace there in Salt Lake City. Your Utah Jazz big test tonight, Matt, as they take on James Harden and the Launch Rockets.
Yeah, it should be a fun one. You're talking about a team that loves to get up and down the floor, a team that loves to play half-court set basketball. So, you know, Utah's going to slow it down. Houston's going to try to speed it up, and we'll see which one prevails. I think they've split so far in the regular season. So it's a big game because Utah's knocking on the door for that 3 seed a little bit that Houston's holding down right now. So with 17 games to play, they're only 3 back. So a win tonight, you know, puts them 2 back, and it makes things interesting because the 4 seed is going to have to end up going against the 1 seed, which, you know, probably is going to be Golden State, and no one really wants to get Golden State in the second round.
Well, I mean, Rockets have been giving away a lot of games that were winnable for them. Mm-hmm. And to be one of the top teams in the Western Conference going into the playoffs, you can't have that happen. I mean, that's the opposite of the way you want to go. They have a new piece in Lou Williams, but at the same time, they've still got most of their team intact. And against the Jazz could prove something here. It'll be interesting to see how well George Hill is he actually? I think that's a major question with the Jazz.
George Hill listed as questionable this evening with a toe, as is Joe Johnson, questionable with a groin. Derek Favors is out tonight with a right knee. Over on the Houston side, Ryan Anderson listed as doubtful with back spasms.
See, and I think that's going to be a bigger blow for the Jazz, and I've been hearing that lately, that same report. Mm-hmm. And George Hill is one of the biggest pieces for them, and Joe Johnson was surprising for me. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, Jay Smooth, he plays at a different pace, and like Matt said, they're definitely going to have to try to slow it down. The absence of Ryan Anderson for the Rockets, that's going to play a big piece in their 3-point shooting, but I bet you they're still going to get them up.
Yeah, Houston, second in the NBA in points per game at 115, and the Jazz are first in the NBA on opponents of points per game at 96. So something's got to give, and you got the second best offensive team against the best defensive team. But I want to go back to George Hill, and we'll go out to you, Matt, out there in Oakland. George Hill was in the news about the possibility of having an extension with the Jazz. They've already locked up Rudy Gobert. They really want George Hill back. They've got to figure out, with Gordon Hayward being able to opt out of his contract, and all indications are that he will, how do the Jazz use the rest of this season to try and figure out what they want to go forward with in the offseason to maybe make a 2 or 3 or 4 year run of relevance?
Well, I think keeping both those guys has to be a priority. I think Favors is a guy that they'll probably end up let walk at some point. But George Hill has really brought kind of an offensive presence to the backcourt that they didn't really have before from the point guard position. And I know Hayward, a small forward, is really their rock, and he's the number one guy they have to keep there. But George Hill has played some great basketball. I think the only issue with George Hill is injuries. You know, the 14-15, he only played 43 games, but and he's been banged up a little bit this year so far. He's only played 38 games, but when healthy, I mean, he puts up numbers. So, yeah, the key for them in the offseason is keeping Hayward number one, keeping Hill number two, and then, I mean, Gobert down low. I think those are the three that they have to center around to keep this team together. But they do have young, Rodney Hood's good. They brought in some veterans that have helped them out. Like you said, Joe Johnson, Joe Ingles is playing well. So I think that they found the right kind of guys to fit around. The big three for them have to be Hill, Hayward, and Gobert.
I completely agree. I think that favors position, though, is kind of an X factor for them, though, because that is the one that has less spotlight and where a role player can actually come in and overperform. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important, especially for a playoff team, especially if you're trying to go forward with your team and stay relevant. But absolutely, Gordon Hayward, he's like your quiet assassin. Doesn't really say much. He just plays the game and plays it the right way. And George Hill, a big key piece. If they can get Dante Exum healthy, and playing that backup position. I mean, they have a solid rotation. They stick to their principles. I feel like they're kind of like the Spurs' little brother. Whereas their consistency in the organization and the way they play in their culture of the Jazz stays true. And the Spurs have just been more successful, have had better players, have had better luck as far as injuries. But the Jazz are always that team in the offseason that are creeping up, and people kind of talk about that, not talk about as much as other teams in the West, but definitely outperform other teams just by being competitive and sticking to their principles.
They do get to retain Derek Favors. He is under contract for next year. They'll have to make a decision on him going forward after next season. Gordon Hayward is going to be the big question mark because he's going to have a lot of options, and it depends on what he wants to do. And when you think about where he fits in around the league, and he pretty much fits in just about anywhere that you want to go. And I keep saying that I would love to see him play in Memphis. They have a lot of contract problems, but could you imagine him on the other side of Conley, Matt?
No, I don't want to imagine that. I like him right where he is in Utah. Memphis did it. Memphis gave Parsons a boatload of money to be terrible.
Biggest mistake.
Yeah, like you said, they have enough bad contracts there. I think Hayward's got to realize that he's a man there in Utah. You know that they can probably offer him the most money to stick around. He's starting to really be the foundation of a team that's up and coming. Stephon, I think you hit it right on the head when you say that they're building it like San Antonio kind of built it up. There's nothing flashy about what they do. They go out, they play hard basketball, they're solid, and a lot of credit to Quinn Snyder. I think he's come in and done a fabulous job. So, I mean, this is a team where if they keep the pieces together, I mean, they're going to contend year in and year out. So, Hayward's going to get, offered obviously big bucks and a lot of flash other places, but when you can be the man there, why not stay and build something there?
The Snyder ex-assistant Lakers coach.
Snyder's, he's been all over the league.
He's big time. But I think key for them is having Jerry Sloan still involved with that organization because, I mean, let's just give it to him. He pretty much built that team. and the whole Deron Williams situation was probably a kind of a blessing in disguise. He seemed like he was getting worn out by coaching that team. And it's just better to have him in the executive offices for sure.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see what they do the rest of the way. I really like that analogy of the sort of Spurs light and the Rockets are Warriors light. And the Warriors, they're trying to figure out how to play a little bit without Kevin Durant. They stumbled out of the block without him. They've righted the ship since. They get Isaiah Thomas and the Celtics tonight. Middle of a long road trip, they get to come home for one game before they go back out on the road. How are the legs for Golden State tonight, Stephon?
You know, both of them have something to prove. The Warriors, I'm still not sold on this whole Matt Barnes thing. I feel like Andre Iguodala is having to do a lot more. He had a big game the other night, but I don't think that's acceptable for – not acceptable. I don't think that's going to carry them through the playoffs to – to get them to the finals how they want to be. That takes away from their bench, obviously. And the Celtics, man, they I don't know what's going on with these guys. Like, they're giving up games late, and they're staying competitive. But, man, I tell you, if they had that big man,
right?
That's their key that they're missing. And I was hoping that they would have, like, a guy like Andrew Bogut. I feel like Andrew Bogut would have changed the Rockets, to be honest, because of rebounds and blocks. But, I mean, he went to the Cavs, and he's down and out.
Yeah. Karma
got him, huh?
Yeah. Hey, you remember when they had that big guy filling the lane in Boston, went by the name of David Lee? Wouldn't they like to have him back? The way he just took things over in San Antonio the other night. Him and Kawhi Leonard.
David Lee, the man that'll never go away. I'll tell you what, dude. David Lee in his prime was good, and David Lee is still finding a way to get it done. And I have to tip my cap to him because he's staying relevant. He's not the answer to winning championships, but he's giving them good minutes off the bench in San Antonio.
Look, he's not the answer, but he's part of the answer.
He can be part of D, all of the above.
D, all of the above, Lee. Yeah, he can because he sticks to his role. And that's what you need with a guy coming off the bench, especially a big man that runs the floor and plays defense. And, you know, he's just in the right spot at the right time. And that's what you need if you want to keep things in order. And right now, I mean, is there really a set rotation without at least two or three starters for the Warriors that you can say, oh, they're going to go out there and win a game? No, I mean, it's just too much in the air. And as far as the Celtics, it's the same thing. I mean, they're the second best in the East, and they're so far away from Cleveland, who's even struggling right now.
Right. Well, I think
the whole East is a mess.
I think a little bit of the panic maybe the last couple of days with the Celtics, I feel like they just need to get home and they just need to be on the East. They've had over the past month, Matt, we had talked about that road trip that they made where they went to Portland, Utah, and Dallas, and they're back out on the West again with a tough trip late in the season that I feel like they're going to get home. They're going to make a little run. They're probably a nice solid two going into the playoffs. I'll give you the last word on this, Matt. We're just about ready to head to break.
Yeah, the East is a mess, and then I wish Jabari Parker stayed healthy because I want to see Milwaukee with the big three. Next year we'll see Milwaukee's my next Utah.
Yeah? Wow.
Middleton is such a stud.
Team has a chance. Okay, that's true. I like Middleton. He hasn't had his chance yet. He needs to stay healthy.
Yeah.
But these guys can't. They got to get shooters, man.
Yeah, well, maybe you can go like in the way back time machine and just have the 3-on-3 all-time Bucks, and you can have Dirk Nowitzki and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and O.J. Mayo, and then there you go.
O.J. Mayo, oh my
there's
gosh.
Your, O.J. Mayo.
There's your, that's right, there's your shooter from the outside. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game. It's time for a Q&A. Remember, if you'd like to send us a question, just email us to submissions@joefanshow.com or tweet us at @JoeFanShow like Daria here in Las Vegas did. And she asks, should the French Open offer Maria Sharapova a wild card entry? #, cheaters sometimes win.
Yeah, well, why not, right? It's the French. They'll offer anyone anything. Let's see. Is she in shape to play? Does it really matter? Go ahead and offer it to her, and let's see what happens.
That's what I say. Throw a wild card in there. Throw some drama. I think it would be great.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like though she got her break when they reduced her suspension from 2 years to one. So maybe make her earn her ranking back a little bit. Make her play the qualifier. If you really want some attention and some tickets, no one goes to the qualifier event. So make her do that instead. Ty in Los Angeles asks, what is your least favorite announcer cliche? #, lazy in the booth.
My least favorite is when they say that the final score was the game was a lot closer than the final score indicated. You know what the final score indicated? That one team won and one team lost. Right. That's all you need to know.
Oh, I mean, that's like me with stats, man. And they just throw a stats out there, but they lost by 20, 30 points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's my biggest pet peeve.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mine is when they say stupid things like when Steph Curry shoots a 30-foot three-pointer and they go, that's like a layup for him. But if you're shooting layups at under 40%, then you're terrible at shooting layups. Like, why does somebody say that? That's the dumbest thing that you could ever say. I hate that.
Yeah.
Like I thought for
maybe because he maybe I because for he shoots. Sure yours was going to be the GOAT, Clayton.
Oh, yeah, the GOAT. Yeah, yeah, that's.
Well, maybe, just to answer your question, maybe it's because he shoots more threes than he does a layup.
Yeah, but it's not like a layup because he can't make them at 95%.
Majority of the guys tend to. It's not like they used to.
It's not like a layup for him.
I get you. It's I dumb. Hear you.
So dumb. Caleb here in Las Vegas asks, what's more likely, that Tim Tebow will make it to the majors someday or Nate Robinson will play a full season in the NBA again? Hashtag long shots.
There's a better chance I'll be on the cover of a Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue than any of those two things happening. I'll tell you that right now. Neither one is going to happen.
Well, I'll say Tim Tebow because Nate Robinson ain't making it back in the NBA.
Yeah?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, Matt, don't go with the swimsuit. Go with the ESPN The Body issue. I think we'd all be more comfortable with that. You've been listening to the Joe Fan Show right here on NBC Sports Radio at 920 The Game. For Stefan and for Matt, this has been Clayton. Enjoy the games. T.C. Martin, the doctor, is next. I'm no